And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
All right, here we are, the Monday after Super Bowl 56. It is in the books, and it goes to the NFC. The L.A. Rams bringing home their first Super Bowl title, while residents of L.A., I think they had a couple NFL titles in the 50s before the merger, but this one in the Super Bowl era, the first, as L.A. residents. I know the Raiders won a Super Bowl while they were playing in L.A., so technically not the first NFL franchise to win while there, but you know what I'm saying. They're back from St. Louis, and they've won in L.A., and it seems like a pretty big deal for Los Angeles, but L.A. is kind of known as a front-running town just a wee bit. And so there they were. All the stars were out. I think The Rock missed leg day at the beginning of the show. His top half of his body is way too big for the lower half. I texted all these guys. I think The Rock missed leg day. I mean, his legs are big, but in those pants, those look like he pulled them out of MC Hammer's closet. What the heck were those things?
I mean, all of his clothing on him just made him look like one shredded individual, which of course he is. But I was like, holy, okay, he needs to suit up now.
Yeah, I'm going to say this. I don't think the NFL needs a hype guy.
I don't think so
either.
It's
the Super Bowl. What do you need a hype guy for?
Yeah.
That's like something his league would do because he owns the XFL, which I guess is coming around in 2023. Not even this year. The USFL is what's coming around in the spring, I guess. And then the XFL the following year. And he's part owner. That's where I would expect him to be delivering that speech or whatever. And you could tell he was reading the cue cards alongside the camera. I didn't know what to make of that. I was like, do we need to smell what The Rock is cooking here? It's the Super Bowl. You don't need him.
I think it was, let's try and get as many stars as we can into one building and pack it into
Good Lord. 4 hours.
I mean, everywhere you looked, and they cut to it on the Jumbotron, you could see on social media and just on the broadcast, too. I mean, like you said, L.A. is a thing of its own. It brought out so many different celebrities. That was really cool to see because I know a lot of people think the NBA is that, where the stars come out and they sit courtside, but having a Super Bowl in L.A. or another big city, just seeing how many people came into town for that game to be a part of the event, how many people probably don't even watch football on Sundays that were a part of the Super Bowl was kind of cool to see all the stars.
Yeah, I see J-Lo with Ben Affleck.
Yes.
You got to hit me with it. Is it just me or does Ben Affleck always look like he'd rather be someplace else? Does that guy ever smile? Is he ever happy to be anywhere?
I mean, honestly. He's next to J-Lo. You should be happy to be next to J-Lo.
You'd be ear to ear if you're next to her. But, I mean, I can't figure that dude out. Like, I don't get him. There's something missing there for me. I can't put my finger on what it is. But no matter where this dude is, it looks like he's miserable. It looks like he'd rather be someplace else. I don't get him. I think, be happy about life, bro. You're a multimillionaire.
You are at
you
the Super Bowl.
You have J-Lo on
box.
Your arm. You got a second chance to put J-Lo on your arm, okay? And like he looks like he's completely disappointed. Oh, my God, I'm at the Super Bowl. L.A. is just not for me. Can I go back to message? Like, come on, bro. Be better. Be better. I don't know. I can't figure that dude out. He is – every time I see him on camera – it looks like he'd rather be someplace else. And it was funny because I was at my brother-in-law's house. We were watching the game. We started talking about him. And then my wife and then my sister-in-law started getting in on the conversation because it involved, you know, Jennifer Lopez or whatever.
Yes.
And they're like, yeah, every time you like see Ben whispering something in Jennifer's ear, she kind of does half an eye roll, like, oh my God, what's he complaining about now? So, like, it took on this whole thing in the house, took on a life of its own for like 10 minutes. Like, they had been off camera for 5 minutes. We were back to the game. We're like 17 plays into the game, and we're still talking about Ben and J-Lo. That's how polarizing this guy is. That's not going to last.
Did you see what Kanye was wearing? You see Kanye and Antonio Brown were together?
He's off the rails anyway, right?
So
who was he with?
I saw this.
He's not with Kim,
he was with Antonio Brown and his daughter North was there.
Oh, well, that's fitting.
And I somehow found my way onto this Twitter feed or a bunch of these mentions about people that were sitting by Kanye. And so Kanye is Kanye, and he has a black hoodie on with a black face mask where basically like slits were cut into that you couldn't even really see his face when they cut to him on the Jumbotron. And apparently he was complaining about his decision of what he wore because the face mask was a little too warm. He started to sweat in it. It kind of started to become disgusting to wear. And so he's talking to Antonio or somebody next to him like, should I take the face mask off? Like, this was a bad decision. What should I do? And Antonio said, no, you made a commitment to wear this face mask, this fashion. Don't take it off. You've decided to do this. You gotta wear it the rest of the game. And then he took it off.
Yeah, too hot. Just make a common sense decision. I'm too hot in this. I'm sweating bullets. Take it off. First of all, how the hell did that guy even get into the building? You know how tight security is at the Super Bowl. The guy goes in with a ski mask on.
Yeah.
Bad decision from the jump.
Like,
what are you thinking there?
First, second, third row seats, probably $50,000 seats or whatever. And who was it? I think it was Nate Burleson said it on Good Morning Football. This man pays $50,000 for a seat, and he's basically he's watching the game, not even being able to see with just like slits looking out at the game.
Really makes you wonder what some of these Hollywood types think sometimes, because I can't.
If you got money, place to be. LA,
and I thought I couldn't
Super
figure out Ben Affleck. I've given up trying to figure out Kanye. I can't make heads or tails of that cat either. So, okay, I guess you're expecting a little of that at an LA Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But it's a field goal game, as it was yet another one score affair.
Did you think it was going to be tight?
I was hoping for a close game.
Yeah.
Because I was telling Steve this last week, Maddie, through most of my formative years, the Super Bowls were awful. Like the Broncos getting their butt handed to them by Washington 42-7. That was like one of Elway's first Super Bowls, like 87, I think it was. The Raiders trouncing the Eagles like 33-13. The Bears killing the Patriots 46-10, which I enjoyed because I was a big Walter Payton fan, but the game was over after the first quarter. I mean, it was terrible. The Niners beating the Broncos 55-10. Like, these are the Super Bowls I had to watch. Like, they were terrible. So every year, if I'm not heavily invested in one team or the other,
I just want a good game.
I just want a close game that's competitive. And this was, it was a little bit of a sleeper in the first half.
The beginning of the game was fun. End of the game was fun. Middle of the game, I was like, can we just get more of the halftime show? Like, I don't need to see any of this right now.
See, now I know you're a giant hip-hop fan, so what were your thoughts on the halftime show?
I really enjoyed it. I didn't like how short it was, because when you involved that many people, everybody gets a song, which I thought was amazing, and I loved watching it, and I loved the setting of it. I loved the LA vibes that it brought.
Right.
I thought it was great. I like how Dr. Dre was kind of the godfather of it all, and then you go to Snoop, you go to Mary J. Blige, Eminem comes out, and then you have Kendrick also. So, and then 50 Cent is your like superstar, in that you didn't know he was going to be there. He comes out
hanging
upside down.
Was he trying to do a Batman thing? I was trying to figure out why upside down.
He did the upside down in a music video.
Okay.
I don't know if it was for the same song in a club.
Yeah.
But I loved it. I thought it was great. I wanted more of it. I would love to see them all go on tour now. That would be amazing. Mm. So I really enjoyed the halftime show. I don't know. I think it ranks top three in my mind. We were trying to figure this out last night. Like, you watch something like this, epic, if you're a hip-hop fan, it's got to be up there in your mind of halftime shows for the Super Bowl. But, I mean, J-Lo was amazing.
J-Lo and Shakira,
I think, is number one in my list.
Okay.
On my
wow.
list.
Okay.
And I think they're number two.
Okay, so they're both in your top three. Yeah, I would put I'd have J-Lo and Shakira in my top five for sure. For me, it's still Prince at the top. It's still Prince. Like, In the Rain, playing Purple Rain. Like,
Purple Rain, that's really... Oh, what you said.
Now, I know he had nothing to do with the weather.
Yeah.
But, like, it's raining, and he's playing Purple Rain. Like, it's raining on his guitar. I mean, it was just, like... I don't know if anybody's ever going to top that for me. And I like Prince. I wouldn't call him even one of my top three favorite artists. But, I mean, the guy was a virtuoso, and that whole scene, Purple Rain, In the Rain, like, come on! That's like, I don't know that that's ever going to get topped for me. It's going to have to take something pretty special to top that. This was pretty good. I felt what made it hard to be a top-of-the-heap kind of thing was what you said. You had to cram six artists into
and a 50, surprise in, 50 Cent.
That's what I'm saying. So six total artists in 15 minutes. Like, I almost felt like the time they were allotted kept it from being something more. And I would just say, look, I'm not a music producer. I'm not an entertainment event organizer. But for me, they were trying to cram too many high rollers into too short a period of time. And I felt like trying to wedge that all in actually took away from it. Because you're just getting into Mary J. Blige, and then it's like, oh, she's done? Where'd she go? What the hell happened? Yeah. Where are we going? Like, and I understand why, because she had 15 minutes to cram in six artists. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's less than 3 minutes per person. But it left you wishing each artist had a little more time, if you know what I mean.
I wonder if...
It felt hurried, I guess is what I'm saying.
I get doing it on the field because it's halftime, but I wonder if you have a group like that and you do it away just outside of the stadium and the performance continues to go on and you can choose to change the channel and continue to watch them perform.
Right. Somehow there's a part of me that says NBC, for the amount of money that they're paying, is not encouraging anybody from turning the station. That's just me. Me, in a perfect world, would say, hey, just do Snoop, Dre, and Eminem this year and let Mary J. Blige, Kendrick Lamar, and 50 Cent have next year. And that way, everybody's got more time and they can all invest more into the performance and it's probably better overall. I just thought it was too... It felt hurried to me. That was the thing that bothered me. I was like, ah, dang. Like, I was just getting into... Like, one shot's a perfect song for the Super Bowl. Like, let's get more than a verse and a half. Like, it was, that's what, it left me wanting more, and it left me felt like the whole thing was hurried. And that's why, for me, it probably doesn't rank up there. Like, Shakira and J-Lo, it's
they
two people,
great.
But there's enough time for both of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt like there was, like, too many cooks in the kitchen for this.
But I do like having more than just one person as a Super Bowl
performer.
I'll sign
up for that, but six is too many.
Five
is probably too many.
Yes. I would say two to three is your perfect
window. That's the sweet spot.
Yeah.
That's the sweet spot. And I will still, despite all the controversy, sign up for Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson. The ending is unfortunate.
Yeah.
And it mars everything. But that was a great performance, too. So they would be up there for me on the list.
Katy Perry,
Bruno Mars. I loved Bruno Mars. But he was with...
He's got new
he was
music
with Beyonce,
out now,
right? He was with Beyonce and
remember.
The Coldplay guy, I think.
That sounds right.
But I love Bruno Mars. That guy's an entertainer, and he did a bang-up job on that show. So, and Beyonce saved herself because, remember, she almost wiped? Remember, she did that double kick thing, and she almost landed on her tush?
Yes.
And, That's an entertainer going on with the show because she came real close to wiping out on national television
Coldplay,
in front of like
Beyonce
80 million people.
And Bruno Mars in 2016.
That was a good
I
performance.
Pulled up the list.
That was a good performance. And there's your sweet spot. Three people. But everybody gets like a good 5-6 minutes. So if you got a medley of hits you want to run through, you can hit three or four of those before you're done. You know, and you're still good. Six was just unfortunately too many. And the thing was, like, you saw the lineup when they announced it. I think it was on Good Morning Football they announced it. And I was like, holy cow. Like,
yeah,
that
I remember
is like,
co-hosting with you one of those days. I think the day they announced it, and we were like, how is it going to happen? How are they going to do this?
Star-studded. I was like, that's great. But
we both were like, there's no way they can get through entire songs. It's going to be verses.
Yeah, you'd have to double the halftime. And it's already long
I'm
to begin
with. That.
So, yeah, right?
Are you okay with that?
But the game, Maddie, the game.
Watching the game, I think a lot of us had multiple times, at least I did, and I feel like other Bills fans did too. Like, do you watch that game without thinking, like, gosh, this could have been us,
yeah,
and I think we could have won the game?
Yeah. There was – I am a fan of Tori Kelly, the musical artist,
mm-hmm,
and she has a song called Should Have Been Us, and that chorus was like ringing through my head as I'm watching this game.
Yeah.
'Cause I'm like, should have been us. Should have been us. 'Cause the way both of these teams played and kind of sleepwalked through the first half,
yeah,
I was just like, Bills would have beat both of these teams.
Bills would have beat both of these teams. Completely agree.
And it was funny because somebody actually wrote a story to that effect saying, you know, Bills are a good chance of being here next year. Rams are high on the favorites list. And for those of you that haven't seen the odds for the 2023 Super Bowl, the Bills have the second best odds to get there behind the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Chiefs are like 5-1. The Bills are 7-1. The Rams are up there too. I think the Bengals are somewhere in the top 6 or 7. And they're like, well, yeah, but how will the Bills handle Cooper Kupp? And, you know, if OBJ is back by that point, who may have an ACL injury, and that's a whole other story, and Robert Woods, and, well, you know, what are they going to do if Aaron Donald's playing? And I'm like, do you remember when they beat him 35-32 in week 3 of 2020? Like, they beat him already once with a last-second touchdown pass to a guy named Tyler Croft. It wasn't even Dawson Knox. So don't tell me about how they're going to handle these guys. So, yeah, it's just the short-term memory of people amazes me sometimes. But the biggest issue I had, Maddie, with the game was the final series by
mm-hmm.
Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So they get the first down after the 17-yard pass, catch and run by Ja'Marr Chase. Great ball placement there. And then they've got first and 10 at their own 42, 1:19 left, 9-yard pass to Tyler Boyd. Fine, good, 2nd and 1. My only issue there was they chewed up 25 seconds. I was debating whether they should have called timeout there because you're almost at midfield. You arguably need about 20, 25 yards to put your kicker in field goal range. The kid that hasn't missed all postseason, Evan McPherson.
Who also watched the halftime show. Did you see that?
Did he?
He was on the bench. I don't know if he went in the locker room for part of it.
Special teams people are always out early to practice.
Out early at practice. And usually for halftime, yeah.
Yeah.
So there was a picture of him that kind of went viral that was like he decided to stay on the bench, which I don't think he was on the bench for the entire halftime because you can't do that. But he might have came out a little bit early to watch the performance. And I was laughing
yeah,
at the
that's
picture
pretty funny.
Because he had his like arms sprawled out on the bench,
just
like taking
back.
Up all the space, kicking back, just enjoying
that's
the show.
I did not see that. That is hilarious. So they're between the 40s, and that is a popular place for offensive coordinators to take shot plays. So they're in a 2nd and 1 at the Rams 49 after the 9-yard pass
mm-hmm.
to Boyd. 54 seconds left, 2 timeouts. And you're going with a shot play there.
Yeah.
Now, look, I respect the hell out of being aggressive here, okay? I do. But it's not a high percentage play,
no.
Number one. Number two, you only need 1 yard for the first down. So
you have running backs on your team who can get you a first down or whatever you decide to do.
Yes.
If that's Joe Burrow to take the first down.
So I know what Zach Taylor's thinking here. I only need 1 yard for the first down. We're playing on fourth down anyway. Let's take a shot play here, see if we can get a big chunk, and then we can work the clock down from there. I get it, but it's not a high percentage play there. Then the worst play of the entire series is next. It's 3rd and 1, and you call a run play. I don't hate it. You have 2 timeouts. Maybe they're expecting pass there. They're not expecting run, perhaps. But why in God's great universe is Samaje Perine in the game and not Joe Mixon. Mm-hmm. Like, what happened to Joe? Did he need a bathroom break? Was he not available? How in the hell is Joe Mixon not on the field? Why? I need an answer for that. I need to know why Samaje Perine is on the field on 3rd and 1 with 48 seconds left
in
the game.
He had 2 carries for no yards, was targeted once for no yards, did not catch that pass, of course.
So Samaje Perine gets the carry on 3rd and 1, gets nada, gets nothing. Now you got to burn timeout number 2, and now you're down to the last play of the game. You got to have it. It's a got to have it play. And
who did they go to?
Well, I don't think it was the plan.
It wasn't really, yeah.
To go to Perine out of the backfield. That was a desperation chuck, obviously. But I guess you credit the Rams defense and Raheem Morris, the defensive coordinator, mm-hmm. for getting Aaron Donald in a one-on-one situation, which they were very good at doing the entire second half. 6 of their 7 sacks in the second half because they recognized the whole game. They're playing quick pass game, and they're sliding protection to Donald's side, which you would expect. And they adjusted to that in the second half, and for some reason Cincinnati didn't readjust. And they got caught in a lot of one-on-one matchups, and we know the problems that the Bengals' offensive line has. Now you put the best defensive player in football in a one-on-one situation with an offensive lineman for Cincinnati, and it's a no contest, as we saw. So why, on 4th and 1, do you have Joe Burrow in the shotgun there, and he's not throwing quick? Like, I'm sure, and I didn't see this because the camera didn't afford this vantage point, I'm sure the corners were playing up close. You know, they weren't giving them space on a 4th and 1 play, so maybe nobody's there. But holy cow, like, it seemed like a longer developing play than that. Maybe guys just flat out weren't open. But, ugh and double ugh with that whole series there. Like, get the first down. Then worry. You want to take a shot play on 1st and 10? Go ahead. Mm-hmm. 2nd and 1, just move the sticks first. And then Samaje Perine on 3rd and 1? Really? Come on! What are we doing? Ugh. I had any hair, I would have pulled it all out. But my God, that was a terrible series by Zach Taylor there.
And my vantage point of the last series was looking on the Rams side and thinking, like, Aaron Donald is a great player. We know Aaron Donald is a great player, but his ability to take over at the end with those 3 plays at the end, I was thinking, the Bills need somebody like that.
Yeah.
The Bills need a defensive lineman like that to take over at will when he needs to take over to end the game, to have the game end on defense. And his ability to do that, his ability to say, no, we are not going to let them score here. They're up by 3 points. The Bengals have a chance, but Aaron Donald, the veteran that he is, the player that he is on that team, his ability to take over, to get the job done, to help his team out. I was like, we need somebody like that on the Buffalo Bills, and I hope they can go and get somebody like that. Because our defensive line, they showed out at times during the season. But also at times during the season, there wasn't that one guy who could take over, who could sack the quarterback, who could get a TFL when we needed it most.
Yeah, and this will be something we discuss here a little bit later in the show because – the Rams have won the Super Bowl. They made they put a priority on holding on to elite talent, Aaron Donald. They traded for elite talent, Jalen Ramsey, Matthew Stafford, and then they drafted an elite talent in Cooper Kupp. So all of that elite talent showed up in big ways. And they traded for another elite talent in Von Miller, who had 2 sacks yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically our Twitter conversation for today, which is essentially, you know, the Rams won the Super Bowl with elite talent on their roster, either drafted, traded for, or acquired in free agency. Does the Rams Super Bowl win change your mind on how the Bills should attack this offseason, knowing how close they are? So feel free to chime in at @OneBillsLive on Twitter or give us a call at 803-0550. We do have some phone callers waiting for us here. And fresh out of the gate is Tom in Buffalo. Tom, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Good morning, kids. Just to show you I don't have short-term memory loss. My favorite part of the halftime show is probably Eminem, even though I didn't really like much of it, any of it.
Okay.
Well, I remember Steven Tyler and Aerosmith,
okay.
Right? Didn't they do a halftime show?
They must have. I can't remember which one, but yeah.
Yeah, it's too bad they never got Pink Floyd or Real Low.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I concur. The Bills are real close to being in that Super Bowl, and if they had been, they would have won.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm going to complain about the reffing again.
Oh, boy.
And the ties to gambling. Because I wonder if it's more obvious now that the refs are calling plays or not calling plays on behalf of Vegas. And then I could take it a step further and ask you if the NFL is getting a cut of it.
Yeah, I think you're going way down the rabbit hole there, Tom. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off there. But we do have other callers that we got to get to here. I think what you have is a longstanding practice of avoiding gambling like the plague, which is what the league did. They didn't want to go anywhere near Las Vegas, gambling, any of that stuff. And now that, you know, the social norms have made it far more acceptable than maybe it's ever been in this country, more states are taking it. It's an influx of revenue. I mean, New York State, in their first month of legalized gambling, bettors bet over $1.3 billion in the first month. New York State gets 52% of that. That's the tax they charge on the gambling and the sports books. So it's an undeniable source of revenue that a lot of states desperately need, especially in the wake of the pandemic. You're going all the way down the rabbit hole of calls being influenced by refs who are being influenced by Vegas, and you're claiming that the league gets a cut of that revenue. They're getting paid plenty just by sportsbook sponsorships alone. They don't need that on top of it. So they're doing just fine there. If you want to argue that officials are going to get put more under the microscope because people are now putting money on games, it's not just their favorite teams that they're mad if a call goes against them. It's their own money out of their own pocketbook or wallet. Yes, I could see that happening. Fans are going to get more irate by bad calls, especially if their own money's on the line.
Yes, yes.
So I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't think so.
But yeah, I think you're going a little too far down the rabbit hole, Tom, with some of the other stuff. Back to the phones, and we go to Truman in Niagara Falls. What do you have for us, Truman?
I don't know either. What I have to find out is, do you know what's going on with Leslie Frazier?
Oh, as far as his coaching future?
Well, yeah, is he coming back to Buffalo or?
Yeah, I mean, he's still under contract right now. And it doesn't, all the head coaching jobs are filled. And so knowing he's the assistant head coach and the defensive coordinator here, there really isn't a promotion out there for him short of being a head coach. And as I said, all those jobs are filled. So yes, it looks like he will be back for 2022. So that's good news. You know, because they'll have a new special teams coordinator, mm-hmm. although he was promoted from within in Matthew Smiley, and they'll have a new offensive coordinator who was also promoted from within in Ken Dorsey. So even though there are changes in those two major roles, there is continuity, which has value.
Yeah, I think with the defense that we have in place, the guys who have been a part of the defense since Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean took over in 2017, having that continuity, even though we have plenty of veteran players who I think would be fine if we had a new defensive coordinator, it's nice to see at least one of those guys come back after we've had quite a bit of shakeup in the coaching staff, which I think we all knew was coming, and I think we all understand is going to keep coming as long as the Buffalo Bills continue to have really great seasons. Teams are going to poach the coordinators, because look at what Buffalo did on offense. Look at what they did on defense. Of course, you can look back at the 13 seconds of their final game against the Kansas City Chiefs and kind of wonder what happened on defense there. But I don't think that should take away from the amazing season that the defense had to begin with.
Yeah, tremendous body of work, finishing first in the league, as we all know. Let's squeeze Kathy and Buffalo in here before the break. What do you have for us, Kathy?
Hey, I just want to talk a little bit about the defense.
In the Super Bowl yesterday, or are you talking about the Bills?
Yes, in the Super Bowl yesterday.
Yeah, what do you got for us?
I felt like the defense was great on both parts, both teams.
Okay.
But I felt like the Rams, you know, were down to third down with always more than 5 points, you know, five
yards
to go.
Yeah.
And Burrow, You know, how many times was he sacked yesterday?
He got sacked 7 times.
So his defense on the other side was working just as well.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
So what I'm saying is that I felt like the defense on both sides played well.
Well, yeah, the points were down. I think it was probably a little less scoring than maybe a lot of people anticipated. I mean, through the course of the playoffs, the Rams have had averaged 28 points a game. The Bengals had averaged 24. So they weren't far off, but they were a little down from maybe what some people expected. I think the Rams' defense proved to be more consistent and better finishers, certainly in the second half, than the Bengals were, although some might argue the Bengals were the victim of some bad calls down in their red zone there at the end. The holding call on Logan Wilson. Under the letter of the law, you can probably throw that flag. Plus, it's Cooper Kupp, high-profile player. He's going to get the benefit of the doubt. So, yeah, that was a tough one because it would have been fourth down from the 18-yard line if they didn't call that one. Instead, it's a fresh set of downs, and then they go in on the very next play. So, don't worry, Bengals fans. We've been there, right?
Good grief.
Week 14 in Tampa, maybe? Didn't call defensive holding there. That would have been nice. We would have taken that one easily. All right, we got to take a break here, but we'll have more of your phone calls at 803-0550. Got an open line for you there. And does the Rams Super Bowl win change your mind on how the Bills should attack the offseason? You let us know. Maddie and I back in a second here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Does the Rams Super Bowl win change your mind on how the Bills should attack the offseason? Their big top-flight elite stars showed up in a big way in a tight game. Aaron Donald, Cooper Kupp, Matthew Stafford, even OBJ before he got hurt was having a heck of a game, and Von Miller. I mean, all of the big names had some kind of impact on the outcome of that game, and in the end, the Rams win the Super Bowl. As L.A. has their first Super Bowl by the Rams in L.A. We've got callers waiting for us at 803-0550, so we'll go right back to them. We got Gary on a cell waiting for us. What do you have for us, Gary?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing good. What do you got for us?
I think we can do a little bit what the Rams did as far as a pass rusher. I know everybody's thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
I would try to resign Phillips. If Starr's salary cap, I don't know what his cutting him would be.
Yeah, I think it's about seven and change, so it's a pretty stiff hit there. So they got to figure something out.
I don't think that's going to probably happen. We'll see. But obviously, I like a pass rusher. That's what I would do. And I would go all in because they're ready to win the Super Bowl now.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, right? I mean, it's the window, Maddie, because, you know, you've got a team that's right on the cusp and – you know, before other changes take place, most notably Josh Allen's percentage of the cap going up significantly in 2023. Last year, this year, it's still manageable.
Mm-hmm.
After this year, it goes up to like 39, 40, you know, the real big figures that kind of limit what Brandon Bean can do in terms of maneuvering around the cap. This year, he still has a chance to do that. People are wondering if he's going to take a swing here.
I totally agree with, you know, building your team through the draft and with what he's done since he came into Buffalo and what he's gotten out of his draft picks, and Josh Allen being one of those and a lot of your core pieces. But you have what you have with the draft. And then I am totally in for whatever you need to supplement, whatever you need to win within the window that you want to win, try and make that happen as much as you can. Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde are guys that they added as soon as they walked in the building, and they've became huge parts of this team. And you're at this place this past season, this coming season, the season before, where you were, I think, a couple pieces away here and there throughout different games of what you needed to push you over the top, what you needed to beat the Chiefs, what you needed to get into that Super Bowl game. And I think this season you got to go for it, because that window, it's not going to be open for 10 years. This is a window of 2 to 5 years that you're looking at where the Buffalo Bills can be Super Bowl champions. And yes, I do think because of the people we have on our coaching staff and our scouting department that the Bills will be good long term. But your first Super Bowl window, I think, is not going to be open for 5 more years. So I think capitalize on what you can capitalize on, because just believing your draft picks can do it, it's not enough time.
Well, it's putting an awful lot of faith in young players. And as we know, Manny, you've got 7 players on Buffalo's defensive line whose contracts are up. So there are going to be changes there, because to think that everybody's going to be back is just unrealistic. Yeah. That's just not the way NFL offseasons work, number one. Number two, what is the decision they make on players that, granted, are proven veterans, Jerry Hughes, Mario Addison, but are aging veterans? Is it time to turn the page there and then take that money that you might save by not re-signing them and invest it in a proven elite, quote-unquote, veteran player that can be a leader for maybe guys like A.J. Epinesa and Greg Rousseau and Boogie Basham, mm-hmm. and kind of pull them along but say, hey, when it's crunch time, I'm going to deliver the way Aaron Donald delivered for the Rams last night. That's the question. So, yeah, a lot of interesting decisions sitting in front of Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott this offseason in terms of the approach to take to get to the big game, the game that we all were hoping they would be playing in yesterday. Let's go to Kevin in Hamburg next. What do you have for us,
hey,
Kevin?
Hey, guys, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm looking at this free agent thing. Jerry Hughes is going to be gone pretty well anyway from age. And Addison, well, how about him? But Jerry Hughes is going to be gone. Levi Wallace is going to be gone, testing the market, so he might be bye-bye. So we need another cornerback out there somewhere. We got to get another cornerback, a dependable cornerback. Levi got burned. He got a little better over the last couple of years, but he's still burned, I guess you could say, not dependable. He's been burned a couple of times here and there, still too much for what we need. And that still can be a very scary thing when you're going – and next year we got to play the Rams, and Tre'Davious, you know, would probably cover Cooper Kupp, for example, and we need someone that would cover OBJ if he's not hurt, or Robert Woods if they get back, and not be like, oh, God, we have to worry about that and getting smoked constantly.
Yeah, all right. I respect that, Kevin. What do you think about cornerback, Maddie?
I mean, we've started to track mock drafts already, which we may get into later in the week. And judging on the 14 that I've tracked so far and the many that are going to come out in the future, corner is the spot again for this season. I mean, corner was the spot last season for us, but we heard from Brandon Bean after we drafted our first round pick and Greg Rousseau that if we could have taken a corner at that spot, we would have, but we didn't have first round grades on any of the corners that were still available, and we didn't feel like we should be spending it on a corner based on what we had on our board. So this year's draft is deep in corners based on what I've read.
Yep.
And we have been mocked a corner, I think, 5 times maybe in the 14 mock drafts that I've tracked so far. Defensive line has also already been a popular position for the Buffalo Bills in the first round, that number 25 pick that they have. So based on the type of corner that may be available in the first round, I could see them drafting a corner, and maybe this corner could be someone who could come right in and who could play a role, I don't know, as a starter, depending on how camp goes or depending on the person that walks inside the building and what they can do throughout training camp. But I think it's a position that we could be drafting this year based on what's available. But also when you look at the draft, the quarterbacks are not that deep in this year's draft class. And what happens when you don't have a lot of quarterbacks is you have teams who are picking 1 through 10 who are picking outside of the quarterback position. And that sometimes takes guys away from someone who could be available at the high 20s, low 20s.
Yeah, you're hoping that the quarterbacks get picked to push the other talent
yes.
down to the Bills, who are going to be picking at 25. And that's the problem when you are picking later in the rounds. It's harder to draft for maybe a position that's a perceived need. Not that Brandon Bean and the personnel department do that all the time anyway, but it's harder to gravitate towards positional need because you're left with what's left on the board. When you're picking at 25, there's a lot less left on the board, not to mention the fact less in the range of the proper value that you've designated on your board, because inevitably some of that has already come off the board.
Yeah.
So it's harder when you're picking down lower in the round to get exactly what you might be after in the draft, depending on what you landed in free agency. Let's go back to the phones. We'll go to Ben in Amherst next. What do you have for us, Ben?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Good.
So I'd be interested in hearing your input. I know there's a couple of different camps out there. You know, offense should be the priority. You know, defense should be the priority. You know, it's like, hey, we either got to outscore him or we got to stop him. And so I guess when you're Bean or McDermott, how do you prioritize? I know when I was in the military, we had this saying, and it was, if everything's a priority, then nothing's a priority. So is it free agency? Is it offense, defense in the draft? I'd be interested in hearing your input, guys.
Okay. Do you want to take that one first, Manny? You want to
take
a swing?
I mean, free agency, I think we're all hoping that we get some big name on the defensive line. I would raise my hand and say I'm a part of that camp, because I think that's what this team needs going forward next year, to really up their ante in different ways. But based on what Brandon Bean said at his end of season press conference, he said, we are going to start with the lines. We're going to look at our defensive line, look at our offensive line, look at protecting Josh Allen. But then when he was asked about free agency, he said, we'll look to add in certain areas, but we're not going to be big spenders again.
Right. And so I still think they're going to assess where they're at. And if they believe that it's worth taking a big swing in an off season, it's probably this off season. Because as I mentioned, I think Josh Allen's contract, the way it's structured, gets cost prohibitive in terms of being able to do other things on the roster after this year. This is arguably the last year where you're really going to be able to maybe pay, and I know Brandon Bean doesn't have a history of paying giant money for free agents. Mm-hmm. Mitch Morris is probably the only exception when he paid top of the market value for a free agent center. Other than that, he really hasn't done that in his time here in free agency. Does that change? There are always exceptions to the rule. And if you want to do it for a veteran pass rusher, I'm signing up too. Now, at the same time, I would argue corner. But the bottom line is this. You look at Buffalo's list of free agents, and the important ones are on the defensive side of the ball. From a numbers perspective, on the defensive line, Jerry Hughes, Vernon Butler, Brian Cox, who was on IR all year, Harrison Phillips, Ilyanku is back, Mario Addison, F.A. Obata, and then Justin Zimmer, who's a restricted free agent.
It's a lot of defensive linemen.
That's
a lot
of turnover there. So that has to be addressed just from a pure numbers standpoint. Mm-hmm. Then you have the cornerback situation. Is Levi staying here? Is he going to go look for a big contract? If I was him, I'd probably be looking for a big contract. I don't know if that's happening here. So now you may have to reinvest early in the draft to replace that. Yes, you have Dane Jackson, but there's very little depth behind him and Tre'Davious White, who, oh, by the way, is coming off an ACL injury. So there are decisions to be made there. So defense would seem to be the focus early. How much of that is addressed in free agency? How much of that is addressed in the draft? Then and only then do I think you can kind of flip it to the other side of the ball and say, okay, what do we have to fix here? Do we have to improve our depth at receiver? Are we happy with what we have on the offensive line? Is there proper depth behind it? Do we want veterans that are plug and play, or do we want to reinvest in the draft again like we did last year? I would tend to think they would slide more to the veteran side for the interior offensive line, guys you know that can play if you need them to play. But, you know, the money and the dollars and the cents and some of the roster decisions they have to make, maybe even with some high-priced veterans that are under contract. Maybe we saw what they did last year, Matty. They had guys take pay cuts. They waved goodbye to John Brown, even though he had another year left on his deal. They may have to make some of those tough decisions again if they feel it's the difference between being very, very good and being great and great enough to win the Super Bowl. We have to take a break here, but when we come back, we'll get to some of those news and notes that we missed from the Super Bowl. We had plenty to talk about, including a wide receiver whose wife went into labor during the game. Holy cow. I mean, talk about a big day. Super Bowl champ and a dad all in the same day. That's a heck of a crammed calendar schedule. We'll get to that and plenty more coming out of the Super Bowl next. Chris Brown, Matty Glab with you here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Maddie Glab with you here on a Monday after the Super Bowl. And plenty of stuff came out of the Super Bowl, obviously, besides the game and who won and who didn't. Odell Beckham Jr. suffers a left knee injury, non-contact injury, Maddie. It's the same knee in which he tore his ACL.
I hate to see it.
In 2020. And even worse, he's set to become a free agent. That is a tough timetable to come back from and be ready to play for the 2022 season. They usually say it's a 7 to 9 month rehab, and knowing all the stopping and starting and cutting that receivers have to do, man, I would tend to think he'd be on the longer side of that window, and now you're talking November.
And he had a great game up until when he came out of the game. He had 2 catches for over 50 yards, that touchdown in the beginning of the game, which was awesome. So I feel for the guy, and everybody saw the shots that the TV broadcast cut to him on the sideline, and he did not look like he was in a good headspace during that game.
Crushed.
Looked very bummed, and then you see them win the Super Bowl, and he's in tears as so many other players were on the Rams roster, but hope that he's going to be okay. I mean, if it is an ACL tear, it's better than doing it right before the season begins, but you know, any type of knee injury, like you said, as a receiver, you've got a long road ahead of you.
And he just came back from one.
Yes.
Like, he just had a long rehab.
The worst luck, if that's the case.
Yeah. So, yeah, we don't know the nature of the injury, the severity of the injury, but if it's an ACL again, that's going to be tough. Aaron Donald, how about that? But like, it kind of broke during the game. I guess Rodney Harrison from NBC had been talking to Aaron Donald. He's like, oh, well, if we win this thing, don't be surprised if I retire. It's like, what? I mean, he's only been in the league 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
So he was asked again after the game, after some of those reports were flying around social media. This was his quote, Maddie, after the game. I'm just in the moment right now. I'm going to enjoy this with my teammates, my family. I'm just going to be in the moment and enjoy this for a couple of days. This is a blessing. In other words, that it's not a no. It's not a no, I'm not retiring. So I guess Rodney Harrison and NBC's Michelle Tafoya both reported that he is contemplating hanging it up now that the Rams have won the Super Bowl. That would be a major subtraction from the Rams roster.
For the Rams roster, for the NFL, this dude is an incredible player. There's nobody like him in the game right now. And I mean, he's had a great career, but he was drafted in 2014 and could already be hanging it up.
Yeah. And we saw that for a little bit, right? Like, there was like a 2 or 3 year stretch where there were some players that were retiring after like 6 years in the league. Like Patrick Willis, the linebacker from San Francisco, comes to mind. Played for like 6 or 7 years. He's like, yeah, I'm turning 30 next year, I'm done. It's like, what? Like, you're not used to seeing that, especially from high-end players.
Yes.
Who could play as long as they want. But, you know, these guys are making so much money now, you know, generational wealth. 8 years for him, he's got enough money to live on. He's got enough money for his grandkids to live on, quite frankly, without having to work a day in their life. So it's going to be very interesting to see what the decision is there. There was even some McVay might step away and do TV. That's not happening.
He might go and do TV now that he's won his Super Bowl. I'm like, this dude is so young as a head coach.
It all stems from him talking about, oh, I'm thinking about starting a family. He just got married. All right, yeah, I mean, starting a family, yes, I get it. Time commitment that coaching is, I understand all. He's not going anywhere. Not this year, I don't think. I would be shocked by that. I would expect Aaron Donald to retire more than I would expect Sean McVay to step away from football from a coaching perspective.
Yeah.
The other thing about OBJ's injury, Maddie, I don't know about you, but the first thing I thought of was Trey. Like, I watched I was like, son of a gun, a non-contact injury. It's just like Trey in New Orleans, non-contact injury, just look, you know, like the knee just kind of pivots the wrong way. That's the first thing I thought of. So I know Trey's doing well in rehab. He's attacking it here in Buffalo.
Yep.
So hopefully that keeps on trucking. And then finally, as we said, Van Jefferson, the wide receiver for the Rams, his wife, Samaria, goes into labor during the game.
During the game.
As she's getting wheeled to the hospital, she tells the people helping her, don't tell my husband until the game's over. I was like,
I love that.
Wow. Good on you. So he finds out right after the game.
Bolts out of the
hospital with his dad. And he's a proud father to a baby boy. And from all news reports, everything's going well. So glad everybody's healthy there. And I think it's his second kid, or maybe not. Maybe it is his first child. The thing that confused me was the post when he said times two. So maybe he's saying, I'm a Super Bowl champion, I'm a dad. Maybe that's the times two. I didn't know if times two meant it's my second child. I was kind of confused, but I don't know the Jefferson family well enough to. But congratulations either way. Glad it all worked out. That is a day. Your year is made, and what is it? February 14th.
Check. We're good.
Your year
We've
is
done
20,
it all.
2022 is set. It's not getting any better than today for Van Jefferson.
Lucky guy.
No way. Maybe in his life. That's a hell of a day. You're at the pinnacle of your professional career and, you know, one of the best days of your life as, you know, a dad. Unbelievable. All right. We got to step aside here because when we come back, hour number two of the show is going to involve Mark Schofield, USA Today. Going to join us. Got some interesting thoughts on the Super Bowl and the game that was that we were all watching yesterday. We'll catch up with him next here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned.
Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
All right, here we are. Hour number two. Chris Brown, Maddie Glad with you on the Monday after the Super Bowl. And pleased to be joined now by Touchdown Wire for USA Today, NFL writer Mark Schofield joining us, also host of the show. Is it Sco Show? It's the Sco Show, right?
It's the Sco Show,
yeah,
Chris.
That's what I
How
thought.
How you doing? How you doing, Maddie? Great to be here.
Yeah, so let's start here. Give us your biggest takeaway from Super Bowl 56. Were you surprised by something? Were you lamenting the failures of some part of the game? Where'd you kind of come down in terms of a headline to pull out of this one?
Right. I think the biggest headline was just how important it is in the NFL today to figure out the quarterback position. When you look at the differences between the Los Angeles Rams when they were in Super Bowl 53 and this version of the Rams, where you had a quarterback in Jared Goff just a couple of seasons ago that perhaps on the biggest play of that game was a bit hesitant to make a throw into the end zone that could have changed the entire complexion of Super Bowl 53. And then last night you see Matthew Stafford on what was ultimately the game-winning drive, make an aggressive decision to challenge windows in the secondary, to even do it in a little bit of a no-look variety, sort of looking off a defender underneath to hit Cooper Kupp on that dig route. The importance of the quarterback position is paramount in the NFL today, and that's why the Rams went all in the way they did this past offseason, making that aggressive trade for Matthew Stafford. Teams that have the quarterback position figured out are always going to be in a little bit better shape when it comes to make it a deep playoff run. And so for me, that was the biggest takeaway. Of course, there is the secondary one about Joe Burrow, the Bengals offensive line. It was a storyline this entire postseason for Cincinnati. Could they protect Burrow? It was a storyline in the wild card round. He was then sacked 9 times by the Tennessee Titans. Yes, he managed to escape a number of times against the Kansas City Chiefs, but then last night sacked 7 times by that imposing Rams defensive front. And so they'll need to figure out going forward how they can best protect Joe Burrow, and that has to start here in the offseason.
Well, speaking of Matthew Stafford, you have an article that came out late last night about him and kind of details the story of Sean McVay and Stafford coming together, and you talk about how they were in Mexico at the same time during the offseason and then how this marriage came together. And now when you look back on how it came together and how it played out through the entire season leading up into the playoffs and then the Super Bowl, was this the perfect marriage for somebody like Sean McVay finding a quarterback like Matthew Stafford to finally win one with the LA Rams?
Man, I think that's exactly right. And I think, you know, looking back at the decision that the Rams made and that Sean McVay made to pursue Matthew Stafford and to make the aggressive decision to trade for him, to give up the draft capital they did to acquire him. When Matthew Stafford showed on film last season, really through his entire career in Detroit, was a quarterback that in big moments can, as Sean McVay termed it, fix mistakes quickly. It gets you again to that idea that in the hands of Jared Goff, the Sean McVay offense can only do so much. He needed a quarterback that would be aggressive, that would be decisive, that wouldn't hesitate in key moments. And we saw that in the playoffs, and we saw that again in Super Bowl 56, where on that final game-winning drive, you saw aggressive decisions from Stafford. He shrugged off two mistakes. He came back and kept being aggressive, maintained that aggressive nature deep into the fourth quarter, and certainly on the game-winning throw to Cooper Kupp. That ability to shake off mistakes, that ability to remain aggressive and decisive, that was the missing component to Sean McVay's offense. With Jared Goff, you had to do more in the play-action passing realm. You had to do a lot more in sort of propping up the quarterback. But in Stafford's hands, they could go empty. They could go five wide. They could really rely on the quarterback to, as McVay termed it when he was talking about why he traded for Stafford, to fix things quickly after the snap when the defense might have shown him a different look. This was exactly the reason they went out and acquired him. It wasn't a perfect game, but they got it done, and Stafford was critical to them pulling out that win in the fourth quarter.
Applying those thoughts to the Bills, Mark, they would already appear to have the quarterback part answered. Brandon Bean, yeah, it was hard to look at your quarterback efficiency table there and your write-up and see Josh Allen right in the upper right-hand corner, far ahead of even Matthew Stafford.
He broke the table, Chris. Oh, he broke the table.
I know. It was just, it's still rolling my eyes over that. But anyway, applying those thoughts to the Bills, the quarterback thing is already taken care of. Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, the personnel department, believe wholeheartedly in building through the draft, signing their own, re-signing their own. They'll explore free agency at the tier B level, if you will. They rarely overpay for anybody. Mitch Morse is probably the only example since Brandon Bean's been here in free agency where they've spent big at a position. Does that approach, though, have to be altered this offseason in light of the model that worked for the Rams? Because elite talent on the Bills is really Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, and then maybe Tre'Davious White, who's coming off an ACL injury. Is elite talent what the Bills should be after now?
I mean, I think generally speaking, Chris, teams and organizations should be after elite talent. But what we've seen from the NFL recently is that elite talent at the quarterback position can mask all manners of sin from a roster construction standpoint. If you miss in free agency, if you miss in the draft, if you have that elite quarterback, he can sort of raise the level of play in the players around him. We've seen it from Tom Brady, and I think Josh Allen has certainly joined that tier of elite quarterbacks that can fix deficiencies from a roster construction standpoint. Now, you did sort of mention and touch upon, Chris, two positions I do think Buffalo needs to look at, whether it's via that sort of tier B of free agency or in this draft class. Quarterback depth, I think, is certainly an area of concern with Tre'Davious White coming back from that ACL injury. I think when you have Cole Beasley, Emmanuel Sanders, Isaiah McKenzie potentially tested free agency waters and decisions that need to be made there, you might want to look at that position, the wide receiver position, whether it's via draft or free agency. But I think because of what the Bills have in Josh Allen, that elite quarterback that is a dual threat quarterback that can, as we talked about with Matthew Stafford, fix things quickly after the snap based on his arm, his mentality, his process and speed, and certainly his athleticism, that gives the Bills a sort of wide error band in terms of roster construction. If they miss here or there on a player or miss here and there on a player in free agency, Allen's ability as a quarterback in today's NFL is going to help make up for that.
You also had an article that came out just about the important plays of the Super Bowl, and the Bengals had a chance at the end of the game with a minute and a half left to try and make something happen, being down with 3 points, and they get to a 3rd-and-1 and a 4th-and-1, and some questionable decisions were made, but also Aaron Donald showed up when he needed to. How important is Aaron Donald to that defense, and how important is it to have a defensive lineman on your team who can be that star guy when he needs to, and who could be that heartbeat of the defense at times?
It's a great question, Maddie. And you could look at a number of ways that Aaron Donald impacted that game. And certainly there were those plays at the end. But even before that, when you looked at how Raheem Morris aligned his defensive front and sometimes isolate, and Chris Collinsworth talked about this a lot during the game, isolate Donald to one side, perhaps with Von Miller or another defender lurking, and then you have three defenders to the other side, Cincinnati was still sliding protection towards Donald because they were concerned that, look, that interior defensive tackle, if he can get quick initial penetration, that can disrupt plays early in the down and make it much, much tougher for a quarterback, even somebody like Joe Burrow, to make something happen to avoid that interior pressure. And so Donald's presence up front opens up all sorts of manners for the Rams and Raheem Morris, their defensive coordinator, to put pressure on opposing passers, to confuse and disrupt pass protection schemes. And then on those two final plays, first there was a third and short run by Samaje Perine where you had Aaron Donald again setting that edge, forcing him to cut inside, and Greg Gaines doing a tremendous job to force Perine to make a cut behind the backfield. And then certainly on that fourth down, getting that early pressure, which we just talked about. When you as an interior defensive tackle can get quick interior pressure, that makes life miserable for quarterbacks, particularly on a fourth and one play where you're trying to get the ball out quickly. But if you have to pull it down and you have to reset your feet because you have that interior pressure, it makes it that much harder to make a play. And so Donald, again, Cooper Kupp certainly worthy of the MVP vote considerations he earned. But I think Aaron Donald had a huge impact on that game.
Talking to Mark Schofield, NFL writer for USA Today's Touchdown Wire. And I thought you drew an interesting parallel, Mark, between Joe Burrow and Dan Marino, guys that got to the Super Bowl and just their, you know, very early in their career. Marino, as we know, never got back there due to some compelling competition in the AFC at that time. You know, the 83 quarterback class had a big hand in that. Jim Kelly, John Elway, all going to Super Bowls when Dan Marino did not after that early crack, I think in his second year in the league, if I remember right. So how does Joe Burrow avoid that in what is also a very crowded AFC quarterback field with the likes of Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert? If Trevor Lawrence catches fire with Doug Peterson, he could be another guy in the mix. How does he navigate all that and get back to the big game after some early success?
Right. It's going to be tough in that AFC. As we all know, this is a crowded conference right now. You just rattled through, Chris, some of the teams that we expect to be in the mix next season. And there's certainly a wealth of talent at the quarterback position in the AFC right now. It certainly looks like the emergence of a lot of young passers in the AFC is going to make it fun to watch for years to come. And the concerns about the Marino comparison are valid. There's a lot of people that woke up this morning and said, well, look, they got there in the second year. They're young, they're talented. You have Chase, you have Jamar. You have Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase. You've got a lot of talent in that locker room, but you don't always get back. It's tough to win. It's tough to come back. Sometimes teams that lose Super Bowls, they struggle more than the team that won the Super Bowl in the following season, that sort of post-Super Bowl loss hangover. I think what the Bengals have to figure out now is how they can protect Joe Burrow, both conceptually with the, you know, schemes that they call and with the personnel that they have up front. I don't want to go sort of revisit that Jamar Chase versus Penei Sewell decision of five, because I think they made the right decision to draft Chase. And I think his season, his production as a rookie receiver, and the fact that they made it to the Super Bowl sort of speaks for itself with respect to that decision. But now they have to figure out the offensive line. They have to look hard at free agency, whether it's a guy like Brandon Scherff from Washington to help on the interior. They have to look hard at options in the draft. They have to make sure that when next season rolls around, you don't have a quarterback in Joe Burrow that is getting sacked 70 times over the course of a season, that's getting sacked 9 times in a division round game against Tennessee, that is setting a Super Bowl record for sacks taken like he did last night against the Rams. The decision to draft Chase was the right one at the moment, but now to avoid that sort of Dan Marino type fate for Burrow, they have to make sure they can protect him in 2022 and forward.
The Bengals certainly will get better next year, try to get better next season in certain ways, because you can't play the same every single season and expect to make it to the Super Bowl. But the fact that this was a 10-17, it's 10-17 with a lot of youth on their roster. What do you think the Bengals season told or taught the NFL and other teams what they can do, kind of catching lightning in a bottle there and being able to ride it all the way to the Super Bowl?
Well, I think it also speaks to what we've sort of talked about in this discussion, is the importance of getting the quarterback position and that evaluation process right. When you have the quarterback that can deliver in key moments, that can lead his team, that has that sort of competitive toughness to shake off 9 sacks against the Titans, to sort of fix things quickly after the snap, like we saw both from Joe Burrow throughout the season and to an extent Matthew Stafford last night, getting the quarterback piece is critical. If you have that, it can cover up other mistakes from a roster construction standpoint. And so teams like the Bills, teams like the Chargers, teams like the Chiefs that were watching this game from home, they can feel comfortable that, you know, we have that component figured out. Now we have to figure out the rest around that player and add talent where we need to, whether it's like in the Bengals example, the offensive line. And it's also going to have a sort of key factor in how this offseason will unfold. Teams that don't have that position figured out, will they be aggressive in free agency? Will they be aggressive pursuing trades, whether it's for Russell Wilson or Jimmy Garoppolo, who might find himself available via trade now that the 49ers seem like they're ready to move forward with Trey Lance as their starting quarterback? Quarterback decisions are going to be a huge part of this offseason process. And when you factor in the idea that it might not be the best quarterback draft class. It's not like last year's where you'll have, you know, five players in the top 15 picks. This is a bit weaker of a class. You might have quarterbacks that are going to be good at some point, whether it's a Kenny Pickett, a Malik Willis, a Matt Corral, a Desmond Ridder. They might not be ready week one of next year. And if you're a team like, say, Denver that feels that you're close, but you've got to keep up with Justin Herbert, you've got to keep up with Josh Allen, you've got to keep up with Patrick Mahomes, you need that quarterback piece, you might have to address it via trade. And so both these teams, the Rams and the Bengals, they illustrated that you need to figure out the quarterback piece. However you go about doing it, whether draft or free agency, you've got to get that right, and then you can fill in the rest around it.
Yeah, and speaking of that, there's one more that I wanted to throw at you, which was on the NFC side. Brian Daboll's the new head coach in New York with the Giants, obviously, leaves Buffalo for his first head coaching job at the NFL level, and he's got to work with Daniel Jones. It looks like Jones is going to have this year to prove that he can develop, he can flourish under Daboll and offensive coordinator Mike Kafka. Jones has athletic ability. You know, we've seen him take off and run for big-time yardage at times. His arm seems good enough. He certainly seems to have it between the ears. But it looks like he's only going to get probably this year, right? Like, this is kind of the gimme year that Daboll gets as head coach. And for Jones, it's got to work. Otherwise, they're going to be in that same pool we find some teams in this offseason, right?
Chris, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, Jones is one of those quarterbacks that is an incumbent starter in the NFL this season, I think is going to get that benefit of an extra season because of this incumbent rookie class. If this were, say, last year and we were in the same boat with Daniel Jones, I think the Giants would probably have explored drafting a quarterback. If this were perhaps next year with Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, Phil Jakovic from Boston College, you might see the Giants decide, look, you know what, we've seen what we got from Daniel Jones. Let's move forward with a different name at this position. I think that sort of weaker draft class is going to give Daniel Jones one more season under Brian Daboll to put it all together. You mentioned the athleticism. You mentioned the arm talent. Brian Daboll has said that, look, you know, I'm going to build this around Daniel Jones. I think he can be the starting quarterback that the New York Giants need to take steps to win this division. Now they have to put it together. What's going to be tough for Jones, this is now, I think, his fourth offense in sort of 4 years, dating back to his time in Duke. Anytime as an offseason, in an offseason program, you have to spend time learning a new playbook, learning a new system. That's going to make it tough. But Daboll, during his time in Buffalo with the Bills, showed the ability to work with his young quarterback. Josh Allen talked about it during Super Bowl media week. He sat down, Brian Daboll did, with Josh Allen, asked him, what plays do you like? What concepts do you not like? If you don't like it, we're not calling it. And so I have confidence that Daboll is going to be able to sit down with Jones, get together on the game plans that Jones wants to see, the route concepts that he wants to have called. And that's going to put Jones in a position to be successful. But you're right, Chris. This is a make or break season for Daniel Jones, because the Giants are going to face a decision. If he can't make that step that he needs, they're going to have to move on next offseason.
Yeah. Mark, thanks as always for the time. Get some rest after a long season. You finally get to kick your feet up a little bit, but I know you'll be back on the free agency trail in the not-too-distant future here. Thanks again.
Thanks so much to both of you. Have a great day.
Yeah, take care now. That's Mark Schofield, NFL writer for USA Today's Touchdown Wire. Yeah, definitely make or break for Daniel Jones. Mm-hmm. But I think there's going to be more quarterback movement again this offseason. Maybe not to the degree that we saw last year, you know, with Wentz going here, Stafford going there, Jared Goff. But I think Russell Wilson could be on the move. Is Carson Wentz on the move? We don't know. There was some interesting stuff surfacing yesterday that kind of made you scratch your head. Kyler Murray apparently doesn't like getting blamed for the problems in Arizona. So that seems really strange and odd down there. And he mentioned Jimmy Garoppolo, too. I mean, there's going to be some named guys that are going to be out there floating around. I think some people could be changing addresses here in the offseason at quarterback again. It's going to be crazy.
And I think now that you saw all the shifting that happened last season, I think more quarterbacks are willing to take a chance and go somewhere else now, because look at what happened for Matthew Stafford. I'm not saying that it's going to happen for any quarterback. If they choose to go to a good team, you're bound to win a Super Bowl. But I just think we're in this new era of the NFL where you don't have to be tied to that one team as a quarterback for your entire career. You have the freedom to move around, as your contract says, or as you want to negotiate and communicate, whether it be social media or to your head coach or whatnot. I think we're starting to see more guys have willingness to go outside of the team that they've been a part of for 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, and if you look at the last 2 years as examples, I think it only convinces those quarterbacks who may not be 100% happy with where they are all the more to look to make a move. Because you go, because it used to be, ah, well, his contract's too big. You can't move him because the cap hits too much. Carson Wentz gave the Philadelphia Eagles a $37 million cap hit. They traded him anyway. Matthew Stafford spent 11 years in Detroit, got traded, won the Super Bowl. Those two examples alone are probably convincing any quarterback that's even thinking about it that it's now possible.
Yeah.
Based on those two examples alone. Let's get back to the phones, though, at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, where we're asking you, does the Rams' Super Bowl win change your mind on how the Bills should attack this off season? We go to Andy in Florida next. Andy, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good.
And Maddie, how are you? I really just wanted to get this off my chest, and I'm going to make this as quick as possible for you guys, because this is really my almost my end of season type of take, where I finally am getting to the point where I can kind of express myself about all this. But a previous caller stated to you guys a little while ago that he wanted the opinion of you guys about what the priority of this offseason was, whether it's offense, defense, et cetera. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I have a sincere different opinion, and that's what triggered me to even give you guys a call. And hopefully this helps me get through this last step of the stages of grief. I mean, you got the five stages of grief are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance.
Yeah.
And honestly, maybe not in this order, but the one I've been missing is acceptance. And I still don't have it fully, but I promise you, I hope this phone call and you guys can help me with getting to that final step.
Yeah.
But honestly, this is how it started for me. It was in the first and foremost thing, it was denial, absolutely. Then depression. Maybe even a combo of those two after the game. I bargained with the idea that overtime was flawed. I mean, but that was easily fleeting for me because, truly, to me, overtime was never even supposed to happen. And then anger definitely kicked in immediately after that and watching football again. But I combated that with turning off every single radio and TV show. I mean, I listen to you guys every single day, starting at 6 a.m. all the way through. You know, to show up in the Bulldog. I do this every day, and I couldn't even do it because somebody would remind me of something that would just trigger me and be like, ugh. And then I'm literally right now teetering the line with anger and acceptance because I'm trying to. I don't think I can ever forget or forgive 13 seconds. Simply stated, I'm 38 years old, and what this reminds me of, honestly, is when we didn't finish in Game 7 in Carolina. As a Buffalo Sabre fan, and our opponent would have been the Edmonton Oilers and Dwayne Rolison. That was our cup.
Yeah.
This year, we would have had Cincy at home in Orchard Park and been able to get the Lombardi, in my opinion, versus an inferior Rams team. But, I mean, we would have got there. The way Josh was playing, he was on a different level. He was superhuman. I mean, he's good, but what he was doing, it was just insane. But you know what? The main part that I'm really trying to tell you is what the priority to me in the offseason is. It's signing as many of the guys that were on our roster wearing a Buffalo Bills uniform. I don't care about offense. I don't care about defense. I care about Brandon Bean and trusting that process because I know he'll build through the draft. He will continue to do that. But if there's a priority, it's truly sign as many of those guys as you possibly can because if there was a definition of humble and hungry. I mean, you can't lose in 13 seconds and not be humble and hungry. We got humbled, and if you're not hungry, then yeah, we don't want you on the team. But those guys need to come back because we were 13 seconds away from doing something special, a second AFC championship in two consecutive years. I mean, there's not many things, there's not many holes that we need to fill. We were there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no excuses. There was I'm sorry I'm going to ramble, but that's it. I mean, that's my take. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think that it's about offense and defense. I think it's simply about getting those boys back, getting them in the offseason, getting them in the weight room, and handle it. I mean,
yeah.
You come back next year and get hungry.
Right. I get it, Andy, and I know I feel for you because it's hard to make peace with it. I get it, and thanks for the call. But I will say this. The Bills, to a great degree, Maddie, tried to run it back last year.
Yeah.
They brought a lot of the same guys back into the fold. And they didn't even get as far as they did the year prior. And the sentence that is ringing in my ears right now is when Coach McDermott says, every year is different. And he's right. Every year is different. So to think you can take the tear that this team was on at the end of this past season and repackage it with the same guys and have just as much success, if not more, in 2022, I think with the way this league works is a little flawed in terms of its thinking. Every year, as Brandon Bean said at his end of season press conference, you have to be looking for what the next thing is in this league. You can't say, well, let's just get everybody back and hope it's good enough. You have to stay ahead of the curve. You can't stay on the curve. You have to be ahead of it because the margins are so thin in this league. So, Andy, as hard as it is for you to find peace, you will have to find and make peace with what happened. And then secondarily, you have to expect this team to try to look for ways to improve, not stay the same. I don't know if you feel the same way, but
I think back to the NFC season press conference with Brandon Bean, and when he was asked about running it back this past season and then trying to do the same for this season, he was really quick to say, well, we didn't just want to run it back last season. We didn't necessarily think that we could get the guys that we could at the value we placed on them, but then it ended up working out for us. Yeah. So that was he was quick to say that was never really the plan for us, but that's kind of just how it worked out, and was then quick to say that's not going to be the case this year as well. We are going to try and run it back with some of the guys who we deem are important to this team and can help us out for next year. But also, when you asked players, when you asked the coaching staff after the season, when the guys did locker cleanout day, about having a lot of the same pieces for next year, they were all saying things like, this team is going to be different next year. Every year is different. Every year has new pieces. Every year you part ways with people. So I think the Bills understand that maybe this year is going to look different than the previous years, than last year. Maybe we're going to see a wave of new people come in because that's what they need. I do think the players that remain on this roster, that they want to be on this roster, you have a different feeling about next season, knowing what you went through this season, knowing the 13 seconds. I think that's going to stick with those guys a lot longer than the previous season did. I think the 13 seconds irks them in ways that the last loss in 2020 did not.
You lost that game by 2 touchdowns.
Yes.
I mean, that game was over.
Yes.
And, you know, you had mistakes, you had turnovers, you didn't execute at key times of the game. And, you know, with about 4 or 5 minutes left, the game was largely decided and you knew what was going to happen. The divisional playoff, we all know, they had it in the bag. They let it get away.
Mm-hmm.
And those tend to sting more. And to spin it positive, those often motivate you more to make good on those past failures in the future. So hopefully that is very much the case. But I think this roster is going to look dramatically different from what it did last year, because I think they have to know, they know they have to get better in different ways to get over that hump. What ways? Those are the questions that, you know, only Brandon Bean and the personnel department and head coach Sean McDermott can answer, and we'll be here for all of them. We have to take a break here because when we come back, a very special Super Bowl edition of the Matty Awards.
Why
they come
not?
Our way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Matty Glab with you. And it is that time, a special Super Bowl edition of the Matty Awards presented by Energy Mark, the official energy supplier to the Buffalo Bills. As Matty did a little extra postseason work. What have we come up with here, Matty? Where are we starting? MVP, I guess?
Yeah, we'll start with MVP. Also, I've got to say, I don't think I've done the Matties in studio since
the 2019 season. I think you're right.
I also don't think I've co-hosted in here
since
that season as well.
You've been remote.
It's
a new day.
It's a happy day.
We hope.
I hope next season it's the same thing. That means COVID
Good
is
Lord.
Better and not a thing. Can't wait for that. All right, we'll start with MVP of the Super Bowl. I'm giving it to Cooper Kupp and Matthew Stafford.
Okay.
I don't think you win this game without both of those players. Cooper Kupp was amazing in a lot of different ways. 2 touchdowns for him, 92 receiving yards, also popped off a run play of his own,
which was a big conversion.
incredible that the way that he was able to do that, he, I think, had three or four guys on him and was still able to get a couple yards. And to trust a player like that, to trust a receiver and know in that moment, that is what you need. Who can do it for me? I'm just going to give it to our receiver, Cooper Kupp, and let him get the first down. I think he is one of the best receivers in the NFL. His second touchdown catch, they went to him, finally gets a touchdown catch there in the corner of the end zone. Both of his touchdown catches were in the corner of the end zone. I think he's elite. I think he's a special talent. A lot of people can't do what he can do, and I'm glad that we have someone similar to him on our roster named Stephon Diggs. And then just Matthew Stafford, just the story of him coming to the Rams, uniting with Sean McVay, a guru in a lot of different ways and what he knows and what he can do and what he can draw up. It worked out well for both of those guys this season. It was awesome to see him see the season that he had at times. Maybe not the best, but really in the playoffs, I was listening to Good Morning Football this morning, and I think they said this year in the playoffs, he completed 70% of his passes, had 9 touchdown passes, and just 3 interceptions, and compared it to his time during the Lions, where when he was in the same situation or playoff wise, I think he had 4 touchdown passes and 3 interceptions. So the production that he has had this season with the Rams, I think it's a really cool story. I feel great for him. He's great with what he does in the community. Same with his wife, the story of them. So those are my MVPs in my eyes for the Super Bowl.
Yeah. I mean, I still remember Cooper Kupp at the 2017 Senior Bowl. He was the best player on the field. Offense, defense, special teams, like the whole week.
Dang.
He just stood out so much. And it's like, who's this guy from Eastern Washington?
Yeah.
You know, and he was just, he was phenomenal then. So to see it get to this point, you know, 4 or 5 years later, pretty special for him, especially considering OBJ got hurt and you got receivers out there whose names we can't even pronounce. Skowronek and who knows who yes. else. It was, I mean, they had to go to him. They didn't have a choice. Yeah. Nobody else was healthy. All right, let's go from that to most entertaining.
Most entertaining part of the game for me was the halftime show. We talked about it in the open in our first segment. I just thought it was great. Elite names that were a part of it. Dr. Dre, Eminem, Mary J. Blige. You have 50 Cent come out as a surprise. Snoop Diggity Dogg. And then my boy Kung Fu Kenny, Kendrick Lamar. I thought it was fun to watch. I loved how it all came together. I like how everybody had their own little part, but also I wish it could have gone on for a lot longer.
Yeah, and we didn't talk about this. I'm guessing this was supposed to be like an LA house party vibe. Is
yes.
that why they had all like these houses
yes.
or underground places,
yep.
right?
Yep. It was an ode to some of the neighborhoods in LA and
okay.
across LA.
Little
so that's
LA
kind
house
of,
party
yeah,
kind of
that was the vibe
all
of
right.
it. So
glad I captured that.
Yes.
Okay. we're short on time, so we will move to Super Bowl. Oh, no, sorry. Best catch in the Super Bowl. I think this one's pretty easy.
Oh, my gosh. Ja'Marr Chase had an amazing catch where he burned Jalen Ramsey down the field. I can't remember how many yards it was, but it was a huge play. One-handed catch as he's falling down. This wide receiver, the season that he had, what he was able to do with Joe Burrow, the catches that he was able to make consistently throughout the season, the best guy in a lot of ways when he was going up against some great talent at cornerback. I love watching him burn Jalen Ramsey, but that catch was number one in my eyes, the way that he was able to get the ball there. And not necessarily bobble yeah. it, let it hit the ground. That is not easy to do. Ja'Marr Chase is a special wide receiver.
Stuck to his hand like glue. Mm-hmm. I will say, as an honorable mention, OBJ's touchdown catch
yeah.
was a higher degree of difficulty than I think a lot of people gave it credit for, because as soon as he caught it, the DB went to arm rake him.
Mm-hmm.
And if he doesn't tuck that ball under his arm on the one side quickly, as soon as he makes contact with the football, it's probably raked out, but because he tucked it so quickly and the angle was so narrow, I mean, it's a great throw, but maybe even a better catch. That would be my honorable mention
yep.
for best catch.
I
okay,
agree.
We go to Super Bowl Punisher, and I think most people can figure this one out, but let
Aaron
it rip.
Aaron Donald was the Punisher of the game. 2 sacks, a couple TFLs, a few quarterback hits. He is that dude on the defensive line. you got to be scared of him if you're going up against him, the way that they were able to put him in one-on-one situations, as we've talked about throughout the show and heard about. I think Mark Schofield pointed out when we had him on just earlier in the show, he was important when he needed to be important. He was able to affect the game in many different types of ways, especially down the stretch there with that minute and a half left. Those last two plays, Aaron Donald showed up, and he is worth how much they have to pay for him.
Yeah. All their elites really showed up when they needed to. Feel for the guy award.
I feel for OBJ. I mean, he started off that game, and it was like, is it going to be Odell's game instead of Cooper Kupp's game?
Got off to a hot start.
He got off to a hot start, and then he comes down with that non-contact injury. We're not sure what it's going to be, if it's ACL or not, but he definitely looked bummed out on the sidelines after he came out of the game and after we knew he would not go back in the game in street clothes. So feel for that guy, especially coming off of an ACL injury to then maybe have one again. It
Same
just sucks.
Too.
You don't want to see that out of the best players in the NFL. You don't want to see that out of any athlete to have to go through something like that and go through something similar again.
Yeah, tough one to take. Best Super Bowl commercial. Thought it was a down year for commercials.
I didn't love any of them, but if I've got to pick two, I think the Coinbase commercial, where it was just the QR code going across the screen because you were like, what is this? I need to know. So, of course, everybody whips out their phone and sees that it's a Coinbase commercial for crypto. And then the Larry David one, also another crypto ad. I thought it was funny, kind of just being up with the times or new things in our world. So I think it's funny that they used Larry David in that commercial. I think he is hilarious. So I thought that
commercial
was a good
one. The only other one that I know I told you about that I liked was the Scarlett Johansson and Colin Jost, who are obviously married, but both in the acting world. And they were doing it with Alexa or something. I can't even remember what the product was, but it was pretty funny. But, yeah, the Larry David one was good.
A lot of crypto commercials this year.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, when we had the whole Y2K and everybody was doing the dot-com commercials. Like, there was this explosion of dot-com commercials in the early 2000s, and we're like, gee, I wonder how long this is going to last. And now that's what everybody's saying about crypto.
2022, yeah.
All right, last one, the You Deserve It Award.
All right, shout-out to my boy Q Morgan. You guys may not know him, but Brownie and I and everybody here knows him by name and is good friends of us. So Q worked for the Buffalo Bills as one of the PR people in the department, and he left us. I wish he was still here because he's such a great friend, but he went to the LA Rams to take a job in their PR department, and his first season gets a Super Bowl ring. A lucky guy. I got to see him in the background of a bunch of the shots when they were celebrating. He had the hat on right away. I know he worked a long week, probably had a really long day, was texting with him a little bit, and so I can't wait to catch up with him. He definitely deserves it. He's a hard worker and a great guy. So
yeah, I also sent him a congratulatory text, and we also had somebody from our video department that works over there with the Rams now too, Sam Lack, who was, I think he had already left by the time you got here, Maddie, but he works for the Rams too in the video. You may see him like running behind Matthew Stafford in the tunnel with the camera. So he also right place,
love
right
it.
Time. So two former Bills colleagues of ours getting a Super Bowl title with the Rams. So really cool stuff out there. So good on them and happy for those guys. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they'll be saying that about us next year, right?
Baby.
Those are the Super Bowl edition Maddie Awards. We'll be back to wrap things up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Just talking about it, and it is confirmed. It is a torn ACL for OBJ. Same one that he tore in 2020. Just came back from that this year and got off to a slow start. Then, you know, wound up with the Rams. But that is the report now. It is a torn ACL, which when you watched it, that's kind of what you thought, right? I mean, that's what I thought. And I was reminded,
we've seen enough torn ACLs in our
day. Yeah, unfortunately. And it's just crazy how these non-contact ones happen on turf nowadays. We saw it happen to Tre'Davious in the Thanksgiving game at New Orleans, which looked, you know, completely innocuous and harmless, but it's just that little, like that little tweak of the knee joint.
Twitch.
And it's crazy to think, because I know some doctors and athletic trainers have told me this. The knee joint, all you need is 20 pounds of lateral pressure, and you can do unspeakable damage to the knee joint. It's crazy it doesn't happen more often. Really nuts. It's sad, but another long road to recovery for OBJ. And you wonder about his career and his future. This is the second time, same knee. That's not easy to come back from.
Yeah, at least he's got a Super Bowl.
Maddie, thanks for your help today. We will catch up with you down the line for sure this offseason. We'll see you tomorrow at 1.